Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing the future of regional economic communities in Africa following the withdrawal of the alliance of Sahel states, Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger from ECOWAS and Rwanda from ECAS. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Eric Tevoruri. Dr. Tevoruri is currently instructor at the Catholic University in Lille, Paris, in Lille, France. He's also adjunct professor and researcher in geopolitics, regional integration in Africa, African politics, currently based in ESSEC School of Management, also in Lille. Eric, it's a pleasure to have you join me today. Sorry for all of the commotion at the beginning of this.
That's okay, Michael. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
And I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Brilliant. So let's start off for those that might not know what the regional economic community means in Africa. What do these mean, and what is the scope of regional economic communities in Africa?
All right. So regional economic communities. So Africa is a big continent, and the African Union, which was created in 1963, the Organization of African Unity, decided in 1980 to divide the continent into regional economic communities. So there are currently six of them, and I specialize in West Africa, the economic community of West African states, right? There is Central Africa, Southern Africa, Eastern Africa, and Northern Africa, of course, right? So the idea is to create customs unions in Africa where countries would trade more with one another and reduce tariffs between them. So a customs union is a space where countries can trade easily with one another. There's basically no trade tariffs, and they are protected by a common external tariff from the outside. It's a little technical, but basically the idea is to allow countries to trade more with one another and develop their region this way.
We've seen that has populated in the last couple of years. We see in East Africa, we have the East African community. We have the COMESA, common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, and a host of whole lot of them. But again, the irony that we've also seen is whilst this is in principle are very laudable for these regional governments, we've not seen much of in practice. We've not seen much of this regional cooperation or economic kind of like growth. What are those factors that have hindered such development?
Okay, those countries are, as you know, former colonies, and they are still, for the most part, linked economically to their former former colonial powers. So Francophone countries, for example. Raw materials abroad without processing them. Right? So what is happening now is that they keep sending their raw materials abroad. They get paid for that, and they don't have the means really to process the raw materials locally. Right? So consequently, trade within Africa is at very low levels. You would say maybe 13, 14, maybe 16% of the global trade is with other African countries. And so most of the trade is with outside powers. So of course, China, the European Union, and the United States. And of course, if this provides some resources to the countries, it does not really develop them, does not help create jobs, does not help them really get hold the proceeds that they could get if they were able to process the raw materials locally. So the idea now is to get them to equip themselves, industrialize, and process their raw materials more locally and create more jobs, okay, so that they would trade more with one another and be better off. Basically,
You've mentioned two things. So let me take you on one of it. So you mentioned the Francophone countries.
Yes.
And we've seen in Africa some kind of distinct manifestation of this colonial stuff. We see the former British colonies and then the former French colonies. There seems to be a different trajectory in their development. So when we look at the Francophone in recent times, we've seen these kind of anti-French sentiments that have risen in many Francophone countries, and that is, some are directly tied to the withdrawal of the three former Burkina Faso, Mali, and all of that from the ECOWAS states.
ECOWAS.
So do you think that there is, do you see that as a positive thing? Do you see that as the something that could help towards that inter or regional trade? Do you see it as a contest or challenge of that externalization of trade? Do you see that as resetting? Yeah, the withdrawal, the anti-French sentiments, and then the whole anti-French sentiment. Do you see that as a challenge to the post-colonial stranglehold on?
It definitely is a challenge to that order. It definitely is. I would say it is a challenge to this order, of course, but also maybe the biggest challenge is for them to be able to produce goods together. They have rejected the old order and feel that they are too dependent on France and on the West. This is good. They've built a development bank, which is very good, but they don't really have an economy at the moment. This is the biggest challenge. How will they equip themselves and manage to process each other's raw materials and produce durable goods? So this is, I would say, a work in progress. They are still working on it, but external pressure is really, really serious.
So very interesting. Go on.
Terrorism, for example, and pressure from outside Western powers. So they have to work on several fronts. One is terrorism, and the other is getting used to working together and producing goods so that they do, that generate jobs and wealth, regional wealth. That's their issue.
Speaking of producing goods together and looking at the economy, so we've seen that these three countries have banded together and formed, withdrawn from ECOWAS, which I think is the longest, oldest, I think is the oldest REC in Africa, if I'm not correct. And they've withdrawn from ECOWAS, formed their own alliance of Sahel states. Yes. How do you think, that is a counterweight? Do you think that is enough counterweight? Or do you think they are better off being ourselves or better off achieving these goals by being within the fold of ECOWAS?
First, they did not have to withdraw from ECOWAS. They could develop their or intensify their relations while remaining within ECOWAS. There was no conflict there. They withdrew from ECOWAS because they were very angry at the way ECOWAS treated them after the 2023 Niger coup d'etat, right? But now, so we have two groups, and they don't have to be to conflict with one another. They don't have to be antagonistic. In other words, they can perfectly work together. I wrote a piece in 2024, a little over a year ago, where I said that ECOWAS really should consider recognizing the Sahel state, the Confederation of Sahel States, and develop not only friendly relations with them, but industrialize with them. That is, design projects where they would include this entity, which is the Sahel States. They can, today, they can still develop projects together and benefit from that new relationship. So the withdrawal of those three states does not mean that ECOWAS is threatened in any way, in the sense that they can still, and that's what they've done, they've started doing since the month of May, that's 3 months ago, they can still develop friendly and productive relations with one another. And they don't have the choice, actually.
But one of the things where you say they don't have the choice, a lot of people have mentioned that these states are basically landlocked, and they have to trade anyways, regardless, with their neighbors, Ghana, Ivory Coast, and stuff like that. Is that what you mean when you say they don't have a choice?
Well, first, yes, exactly what you said, geopolitics, they're not going anywhere. They're still there, and they have to trade with those coastal countries. The other thing is terrorism. I believe it was in late May that Benin suffered a terrorist attack, and they lost at least 50 soldiers. And the spokesperson for the presidency of Benin said, this should not have happened if we still had, friendly, relations with Niger, and if we could, benefit from Niger intelligence, right? So basically, this means that they are both sides need to work together. They need to go past this disagreement with the coup d'etat and work together doing productive things, not only anti-terrorism, but also, climate change, for example, and industrialization. So they don't really have the choice. That's what I mean.
One of the things we've seen, even before AES emerged, is that ECOWAS itself has been an organization, a framework that needed reform, that had issues, internal issues, where a lot of people have seen issues of inconsistency in how they dealt with authoritarian governments, as supposedly civilian democratic governments, and how, you know, how this inconsistency could have led to the AES state. So if we're looking at that and say, how can ECOWAS reform itself? Does it need reform? Does it need to change its ways? If it does, in what ways does it have to
absolutely, yes, it does need to reform itself. One of the issues I would say is that ECOWAS could not really, has put up, you know, rules regarding democracy and peaceful transition power, right? And basically punishing those who have coup d'etats with sanctions, all right? The problem is that, you know, they do not, as you said, they cannot, or they do not punish countries where authoritarian you know, leaders change the constitution, for example, in order to remain in power, you know, eternally. And so, of course, this, you know, you see how the AES countries reacted as normal, in the sense that you will punish, ECOWAS will punish coup d'etats, that is, military takeovers, but not constitutional, you know, changes, or I would say illegal changes of constitution, all right? And ECOWAS is unable today to treat everybody equally. So you put up, you know, rules, regulations that you cannot enforce them. That's the real issue. So you have a serious issue of credibility in in the, you know, on the part of ECOWAS. In my view, what ECOWAS should do is really start producing wealth in the region and jobs. This is really critical. A few days ago, I think about a week to 10 days ago, Benin hosted a meeting with Nigerian officials, and they had this memorandum of understanding where they will basically trade more, reduce non-trade barriers, and produce things together. Okay. This is what ECOWAS should be doing. This is what ECOWAS should be focusing on. A few months ago, the Prime Minister of Senegal, Sonko, went to several African countries, including Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and said, you know, we should basically work together. We need your iron. We can process your iron, and we can, you know, develop, you know, build durable goods together. This is, this is really what ECOWAS should be focusing on: create wealth. You create wealth, you create jobs, and you'll, you know, there'll be less insecurity as a consequence. Okay, so if you are not able to enforce rules regarding democracy, then maybe you should not focus on that, and, you know, think about, you know, everyday people and create jobs.
You've mentioned, so the this, because to be honest, the creation of ECOWAS was not to fight terrorism or to get so much into politics, but rather it was an economic creation. It was for economic development and growth. So, but if we look at the stuff that have been hampering ECOWAS from fulfilling its original mandate, would you say that's that we say, you know, the inability to harmonize tax, for instance, or to harmonize regulations that are even, or tariffs? Do you think it's a issue of capacity or issue of trust between these African nations, or what would you?
Perhaps an issue of political will, perhaps. African countries are not used to working together. And you will not see joint ventures between two African countries. It's a very recent phenomenon. you know, Namibia and Southern Africa, Botswana, working together and producing things, Democratic Republic of Congo and Zambia, for example, with their special economic zones. This is very recent, you know. For 40, 45 years, countries basically, especially in West Africa, tended to develop in silos, you know, individually, and they had their own development plans, and that was it, you know. And so if you look outside of Africa, you see that working together, producing goods together was a priority. You know, this is how the European Union started, you know, in 1950. This is how the European Union got started. But we in Africa do not have this, you know, culture of working together, joint ventures, and so on. This is not African, in a way. But it doesn't mean that this cannot happen. It is starting to happen, and we need to, and ECOWAS should be, you know, pushing more in this direction. That is, getting countries to, you know, send engineers to, like, you know, if I take the case of Nigeria and Benin, you know, we should see Beninese engineers, go to Nigeria, and, you know, Nigeria has a automotive industry, you know, Benin can participate in this, you know, Benin can be building exchange, you know, parts for the Nigerian market, and you know, and so on. But this is new, and ECOWAS has not yet accepted the idea that creation of wealth is essential. So it's not just, you know, infrastructure, not just letting people, the free movement of individuals. It is also creating, industrializing, basically. That is, raw materials from one region being processed within the region, because this is what creates, you know, jobs and wealth. And producing, you know.
There are two questions that will come from there, but there's something you mentioned that I want to take you up on, is the cultural stuff. So when we look at, you mentioned the European Union, which I would want you to draw a parallel between that and ECOWAS, for instance. So you look at the European Union, look at Europe as a whole, culturally or historically. European countries weren't that friendly. They were always at loggerheads. If you look at historically, they were always in war. At war with one of them, and but they've managed, and they have different kind of like cultural they are not homogeneous when it comes to the culture. You have the East Europeans, you have, you know, all these different culture, but they've managed to come under that one umbrella. So when you mention Africa, you mentioned the novel reality of trading or cooperating between each other. So would you say this is a colonial legacy, or even pre-colonial, where Africans not cooperating or interacting? If I want to take it, it'd be that far, you know.
All right. I would say perhaps, probably, colonial legacy, probably. But also, it's leadership. Okay. We had Pan-Africanists, you know, Kwame Nkrumah and others in the region, you know, of course. But also we had leaders who were really linked to France. I'm thinking about the French-speaking countries, Côte d'Ivoire and Senegal and so on, and would not consider the idea of, you know, working with their neighbors, especially if that neighbor is not a former French colony, and producing anything with them, right? But this is not, I would say, this is not the final of the, or the end of the story. That is, we can still tomorrow, you know, decide to work together, right? And I think this is starting to change now, you know. I've seen Benin, I mentioned Benin, Nigeria, Botswana are and you know, in Southern Africa, DRC, Zambia, and so on. This is starting to happen. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So we can definitely, even if we don't really have the means or the infrastructure, this is a secondary issue. We can mm-hmm. definitely decide to process our raw materials together. All right.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the European Union started. Of course, they had more means, but it started in 1950, all right? 1950, that's 5 years after the Second World War.
Mm.
5 years only, okay? France decided to look east, went to, you know, Germany and told them we should work together. And as you know, French and Germans were at war, exactly. So it is a matter of political will, And this can happen in Africa. There's no reason why it wouldn't, you know.
Mm.
We can definitely do it.
I agree 100%. One of the things that I've always condemned is, you know, we've had these episodes in the past, is when Africa, when they talk about climate change, you mentioned partnership in climate change. When you talk about climate change, when it comes to Africa contributed maybe less than 4% to the climate, whatever. But Africa seems to be little industrialization in Africa. So a lot of people have been arguing, and I think I've joined the argument as well, in terms of like, Africa should industrialize.
Yeah.
And to industrialize, we've contributed very little to. Why should Africa bear that burden now? Why should Africa pray? So I guess the question would be, what role is the African Union in using these different racks as a platform for its 2063 agenda of an African solutions to African problems? How is the African Union mediating this cooperation within, or this trade, or this process of industrialization, or process of, you know, economic growth within the continent?
All right. Okay. First, I must admit, I'm not a big fan of the African Continental Free Trade Area agreement. Why? Because I think it is premature.
Hmm.
I am a big fan of regional integration. You trade more with your neighbors, obviously, for cultural reasons and, you know, proximity, of course, and you can produce goods together, all right?
Mm.
And once you get to that stage, of course, you can open up to the, you know, to other regional economic communities, all right?
Mm.
Today, the African Continental Free Trade Area is an interesting idea, but you cannot ship goods, you know, from Dakar to Addis Ababa, you know, or Zimbabwe. You cannot do it. It's or not cheaply. So, you know, which means that, you know, you need to develop an ecosystem, yes, but the infrastructure to make that happen, right? So this is why I believe that regional economic communities are probably the best tool for development and wealth creation and job creation. Then afterwards, we need to go into, you know, in steps. The second steps should be then opening up to the rest of the continent. A number of these regional economic communities, to take ECOWAS for example, are supposed to be a customs union.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean? It means that you cannot, that goods coming from outside that particular area will be taxed the same, whether they are shipped to Dakar or to Lagos or other places, all right? Today, this is probably not possible. It's not in place. The common external tariff is not yet in place, right?
Mm.
So this means that, you know, local production is actually threatened by, you know, with goods coming from the outside, because we don't have that protection in place. So, so this is why it would have been much better to let the regional economic communities develop more, you know, build infrastructure at several levels and work together more before opening up to the entire continent. But you know, the African Continental Free Trade Area is here, and we should, of course, try to work with it. But I think it is a hindrance. It hinders regional economic communities. Their work and their attempt to set this common external tariff and develop regionally internally.
I must have read those arguments. I've heard those arguments as well. But again, you see a counter argument to say the African Continental Free Trade is not necessarily a challenge, but it's one that is designed to use, because I think the regs are more developed. There are frameworks that are that are more structured, more grounded, more developed, that the African Free Continental Free Trade can deploy and use rather than override. So I don't necessarily, in my opinion, see conflict in this. But I do agree with you that we definitely need to start from the region. But there's a question I wanted to ask. When we talk about this regional framework, sometimes they are not as simple as that. Are also complex because you have overlapping rights. Yes. So for instance, you see in West Africa where you see maybe security cooperations between, let's say, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, Nigeria, in a security kind of arrangement, where Cameroon and Chad would be in the Economic Community of Central African States, and whereas Nigeria and in ECOWAS, and and how does this different ideology within this Brexit, does it, how do you reconcile all of those kind of like ideological differences between the?
So are you talking about the overlapping membership?
Or? Yes, the overlapping, okay. Overlapping membership, yeah.
Okay, yeah. This happens, I think, because the African Union did not think that it would be a problem. The RECs should prohibit their members from belonging to other RECs. Huh. It makes, it makes better sense, all right? In my view, one of the best ways to avoid this overlapping becoming a problem is for the RECs to become project-based. Project-based, what do I mean? Let's take the automotive industry in Nigeria. Okay. It is developing, and Nigeria has, two or three very good companies and active, vibrant, companies. We could, ECOWAS could make this a regional industry. There is a regional project, but ECOWAS has not implemented it. Where that engineers from several countries will work at producing specific goods, right? And you will have regional value chains, all right? Producing specific goods, generating jobs and wealth, all right? So when you benefit from this kind of value chain, logically, you are not interested in looking elsewhere and becoming a member to another community. Right? So that's what I mean. If ECOWAS and the other regional communities were project-based, that is, develop project which actually creates jobs, and where all the members benefit, then they would naturally not be interested in belonging to other rival economic communities. So we see today that we do not have projects the regional economic communities do not develop this kind of industrial projects where you have, you know, countries producing things together, contributing to producing one, you know, or a series of goods and generating jobs. All right. And I think this is one of the biggest weaknesses. And this is why countries tend to become members of, you know, 2, 3, 4, or even 9, to take the case of the DRC communities. And so it's important to develop this industrial aspect of regional integration. Industrialization is extremely important because it creates jobs.
Before I come to the last question, there's one other thing as well that affects not just the African continental free trade, but also the regional integration is infrastructure. And we could talk about the tariffs and all of that, actually the fiscal infrastructure. And I think that there's been some kind of improvements in, you know, I think there's some roads that are being built from, I don't know if it's from Africa to Lagos, I don't know, but you know, the Chinese, I think, are playing a role in this kind of helping to be. So I wanted to talk about, what does Chinese investment, you know, particularly let's look at the non-Western or Chinese and all of that, how is it a positive or a negative thing down the line? Chinese investment
this is a broad question. But let's take the mining industry, for example. Yes, Chinese investment is definitely needed, of course, and China is interested in African minerals, right? What is key here is that both sides benefit, and African governments, African countries request that Chinese develop, you know, infrastructure, processing units in Africa, right? So that we don't export raw materials any longer, but we process them, create jobs, create wealth, and then sell them to China, for example. So this old playbook of, you know, having external players come into Africa, extract minerals, and process them outside of Africa should be stopped. That is, basically, it takes time, develop processing units inside of Africa. It can take, you know, 10 years. It's very expensive, but it's really necessary that we have, like, you know, Guinea, for example, today has bauxite, you know, lots of bauxite, but it cannot process its bauxite locally. Does not have the means, does not have the power to process it. So this is how I see cooperation between China or the European Union or the United States and African countries. That is, those outside powers should also help African countries develop its processing abilities, its units, processing units.
I'll come to the last question, but again, you and I know, I don't know if you and I know, but you and I know that I've always said that there can be a win-win situation where it would be naive to assume that somebody is coming to help you. Like Riley said, there needs to be a question where both interests, you can have your interest and Africa can have its own interest. So Africa should be able to express its interest and, you know, find a way to do that. But speaking of that, and I think that ties well into the last question, how do you see development, regional development, or the REC, ECOWAS, for instance? So let's use ECOWAS, for instance. So what do you see if ECOWAS in the medium to long term? How do you see ECOWAS, again, looking at that crack, looking at the withdrawals and looking at, you know, the reform that is needed. What do you project for ECOWAS? And then if you take it beyond ECOWAS, each of the region in Africa, what do you see? How do you see it, Africa, maybe in the next 20 years? Also within its ambitious, you said premature, African continental free trade.
Yes.
How do you see Africa achieving that goal? Do you think it is achievable within that time frame of 2063? Are you pessimistic?
Some of it is achievable, of course. But industrialization, in my view, is key, absolutely key. Because lack of industrialization means more insecurity, means more poverty, means more insecurity. So if you're able to process your own, you know, raw materials together, create jobs and wealth, then there'll be much, you know, less insecurity. So what I see is that we need to, ECOWAS, for example, needs to develop value chains, regional value chains, absolutely, where we control extraction, processing, and production of, final, you know, goods. Finished goods. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is the real issue. And it means, you know, we have, you know, the automotive industry, have the food, we have, you know, agriculture, all kinds of areas where we Africans can take, you know, the lead and develop value chains where African goods are actually consumed locally, not only produced, but consumed locally. So Africans locally. Africans consume their own goods, right? Less imports and more development of local goods. And that's how I think we will globally become more, you know, developed as a continent. So that's it. So.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Africa needs to... And I think our conversation has already started, as you pointed out. You've pointed out the Benin, Nigeria, you know, bilateral MOU. You've pointed out Senegal, and you know, I think that there's some pointers that are showing us that we might be heading in the right direction. But
yes,
there's no way Africa needs to be able to process and produce. And I like what you said about the lack of industrialization is actually a security threat to Africa. That is very, very, that statement is, I find it very, very strong and significant. So on that note, you know, I would end here, but I really enjoyed our conversation and your insight.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Again, sorry for the loss of your mom. And
thank you.
We've been
fantastic.
Thank you very much
again, Michael. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Yeah, bye.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in today, this week, episode with Dr. Eric Thiovredre. I pronounced that funny very well. I did try, but my French is so bad. But anyways, as usual, join me to thank our guest, Dr. Eric, for his very, very useful insights into the future of regional economic communities in Africa. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.